Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 07-5173L. Creekstone Farms Premium Beef LLC versus Department of Agriculture et al. Health. This is Lyson Green for the health. This is Fry for the athlete.
Good morning. May it please the court. Eric Fleissig Green with the Department of Justice. With the court's permission, I would request that 3 minutes of my time be reserved for rebuttal.
You know, we don't always manage to do that in this circuit.
I know. All I can do is request it, Your Honor.
We'll usually give you back a couple at least if we use it all up.
I appreciate that. The Virus Serum Toxin Act grants the Secretary of Agriculture the authority to regulate products for use in the treatment of domestic animals. The district court held that BSE test kits are not for treatment because they are used on specimens that are already dead. But nothing in the statute or in USDA's regulations requires so narrow an interpretation of treatment.
Is that real narrow?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Is that real narrow?
Well, Your Honor, it is a narrow interpretation.
Ordinarily, if you get the veterinarian out for your cow and it dies, you tell him to quit treating it. I mean, you don't want to pay him to keep treating it after it dies.
Well, Your Honor, certainly there is a sense in which treatment can be applied.
I've never seen a vet treat a dead horse.
That's true, Your Honor, but again, the concern...
I've seen lawyers beat dead horses.
I will try not to do that, Your Honor. But the concern, particularly with respect to the Virus Serum Toxin Act, and as the origin of the act which respected hog cholera serum makes clear, the concern was not with the health of one particular animal, but with the health of the herd. And that is a common situation in animal treatment, that you're concerned not so much with one particular specimen, but rather with respect to the whole herd. And that is precisely how BSE test kits are properly used, namely in USDA's surveillance and eradication efforts for BSE across the nation. District Court was also under the misimpression that just because BSE has no cure, there cannot be a treatment of the disease. And that is not true, not merely for BSE test kits, but again, for the very hog cholera that prompted Congress to enact the original statute here. There was, and there still is, no cure for hog cholera. All that can be done is prevent the spread of the disease across the various hogs within the nation's herd. And so, both in the case of whether something is alive or dead, and in the case of whether or not something is treatable, the concern is not with a specific specimen, but rather with the viability of the domestic, in this case, cattle stock. And for that reason, BSE test kits, as they are used properly by USDA, are precisely for that purpose. They help to prevent and manage the spread of the disease by identifying when the disease occurs and allowing USDA to take preventive measures if they are necessary. They also allow USDA to monitor the effectiveness of the feed ban and the import restrictions that USDA and the rest of the government has set up in order to prevent the disease from coming into the United States cattle herd in the first instance. The district court also expressed some degree of reluctance or concern, about whether the test kits are per se worthless.
But yeah, that's rather hard to say that something that the department uses itself for the same generic purpose as the proposal or the intended use by the... it's hard to keep grip who's the appellate and who's the appellant in this one, since everybody's appealing, but at any rate, both parties are making the same use, it's just on a different age of cattle, right?
Well, Your Honor, certainly, I mean...
So you're saying it's worthless when they use it.
That's correct. And again, the same thing is true of the hog cholera serum that was at issue originally in 1913. There were some applications or some versions of the product that were not worthless, namely that were effective in preventing the spread of the disease, and others that were. A product doesn't need to be worthless in all applications or worthless in all preparations in order to be regulated under the Act. And in fact...
How would I find that out from reading the Act?
Well, the statute itself...
It seems... I understand we've got Chevron and Meade and all kind of other deference, but...
Sure.
Isn't the Secretary taking this statute and putting it about as far out as he possibly could?
Well, Your Honor, it is certainly an interpretation of the statute that is with a broad sweep of authority, but the statute also affords that particular authority in two respects. The first is that in addition to targeting worthless and dangerous chemicals and prohibiting, flatly prohibiting articles that are inherently worthless. And again, this is the structure of Section 151, which concerns licenses, which are domestic distribution, and also the structure of Section 152, which concerns importation. The statute empowers the USDA both to prohibit entirely the importation and distribution of wholly worthless products, and then also provides the Secretary in the second half of 151 and in the beginning of 152 the authority to regulate specifically the preparation and distribution of products without any condition on whether or not they are worthless. And addendum 6 is the provision, addendum 1 is the page of those provisions are contained at. I mean, and again, you'll note that is echoed in 155, which is at addendum 3, which specifically states that the Secretary cannot issue a permit for anything that is per se worthless, dangerous, or harmful, which it would be very odd to think the statute only provides the Secretary authority over items that cannot be imported. Rather, the Secretary is empowered not only to prohibit entirely those importation, but also to control, as Congress said when it originally enacted the statute in the Senate report, control.
No. Congress didn't enact the Senate report.
I'm sorry. You're correct, Your Honor. That was a misspeak on my part.
Statute.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. I'm sorry. As Congress reinforced in the Senate report when the statute was enacted, that the purpose of the statute.
Forget the Senate report. Tell me about the statute.
Well, the statute, again, says both that the Secretary can prohibit the importation of entirely worthless products. That's 155.
Are they proposing to import anything?
Yes, Your Honor. Bio-Rad is a company that is from abroad, and in fact, their argument turns on the fact that this is an importation rather than a domestic distribution.
You're not stopping importation of the product.
No, we are regulating importation of the product. That's correct. And the precise reason we are not banning the product entirely is that it is worthless for some applications, but not for others. And that is precisely what the Secretary is empowered to do under 152.
And which part of 152 is your best language?
Well, the first half before the conjunctive and, the importation into the United States.
You're using 152, now that's the
importation.
Act citation or what?
Yes, Section 152, 21 U.S.C. 152. I'm sorry?
Where is that in the
section? 21 U.S.C. 152. It's in addendum 1 of the other brief. Sorry, this is the problem with the cross appeal. It's the blue brief. So the statute reads, the importation into the United States of any virus, serum, toxin, or analogous product for use in the treatment of domestic animals, and the importation of any worthless, contaminated, dangerous, or harmful virus, serum, toxin, or analogous product for use in the treatment of domestic animals is prohibited without a permit from the Secretary. And that statutory provision clearly draws a distinction between any biological product for use in the treatment of domestic animals and worthless ones.
I take it nobody is contesting that this is an analogous product.
No, Your Honor. That was contested in the district court, and there were declarations to explain why scientifically it is, and cross-appellants have not raised that issue on appeal. So, again, the language of 152.
I'm not sure why they abandoned that issue, but that was their choice.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, I can point you to the declarations in the record if you're unsatisfied, but in any event, that is the source of the statutory authorization for why importation may be regulated.
So you're reading 152 to allow you to ban its import entirely.
Well, that would be required by 155, Your Honor, which says the Secretary may not issue a permit for products that are inherently worthless, harmful, dangerous to animals or to, I mean, that's the sense of 155. 152 states more broadly that the Secretary may issue permits not only for those entirely worthless products, but also permits for importation of any virus, serum, toxin, or analogous product for use in the treatment of domestic animals. And obviously, the Secretary's goal here is to prevent worthless applications of the product in the same way that the Secretary, when he originally regulated the hog cholera serums that prompted Congress to pass the statute, was concerned not about the viable hog cholera serum, because that was a useful application for farmers.
I want to get back to 155.
Sure.
I'm not sure that I follow your.
It's an authorization.
That's authorized to issue permits for products that are not.
You're correct. But it also, the last portion of it also specifically prohibits the Secretary from authorizing the import of worthless, contaminated, dangerous, or harmful. The Secretary is authorized to issue permits.
The Secretary is authorized to issue permits.
That's correct.
Forbidden from doing anything by 155.
Let me be clear. I am certainly not going to urge this court to restrict the Secretary's authority,
155 is not a restrictive section. That's a permissive section.
Well, I was...
You can't, I don't think you can get there from 155.
With respect, all I meant to refer for 155 is to note that the second, the very last clause of 155, again, draws this distinction.
Can we go back to 152?
Sure.
That's where you need to be.
Right.
No, if the court thinks that, then I'm happy to go there.
I think you want to wait till you hear our question.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, you're reading 152 to what? Allow a complete ban on importation?
No, Your Honor. I mean, that is certainly what 152 permits, but what the Secretary has done and what 152 also allows.
Okay, question. All right, wait. I just need to be clear on this.
Sure.
How you're reading 152.
152 allows the...
Hold on.
Sure.
You're reading 152, the first part, to say that the Secretary has authority to completely ban importation. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor.
How are you reading the first part of 152?
The first part says the Secretary has permit authority, whether to ban or to restrict the distribution of any analogous virus, serum, toxin, or analogous product for use in treatment.
Now,
without
the second part...
Yes.
Says the importation of any worthless.
Correct.
Now, are you reading those two parts of that same sentence to mean the same thing?
The authority conveyed is the same, but the targeted products are different.
And the first product is what?
The first product is one that has use in some applications, but
and
is
the
not
second
is inherently worthless.
In all respects.
Correct.
Now, I thought that's what the Chief Judge was getting at. That as I understand your reading, you're saying since 152 gives the Secretary this broad authority to ban importation entirely of a worthless product, and then this lesser authority in the first part of the sentence, therefore the Secretary has authority in between those two extremes.
Well, the authority...
Is that your interpretation?
The authority is to permit importation, and permits can be of the form, as they are here, that you are only permitted to distribute to certain entities. And so to the extent that is an in-between, the answer is yes, but I think it's slightly different than that, which is the authority is to issue permits for importation, and those permits may themselves contain conditions on the individuals to whom those products may be distributed.
And therefore, as to their use.
Well, Your Honor, indirectly as to their use. We don't regulate end users. We simply say you may only distribute this to private entity, or to, in
that
the case...
That seems to be the problem here, is that you are regulating end users.
No...
You're not calling it regulating end users, but the Secretary is not banning the importation.
No, Your Honor, I mean...
Right, the Secretary is doing something with the use.
Well, no, Your Honor, if you look at the restrictions... Well, if you look at the restrictions on the permits, and those are at pages 152 and 154 to 55 of the Joint Appendix, those state that these may not be distributed to private entities, essentially. You need to have USDA approval to be a lab that can have these test kits distributed to you. It's a restriction on the seller or distributor.
Now, get to the part where I'm wrong about it being a regulation.
Well, it isn't a regulation on use, Your Honor, at least not directly. It is certainly...
It's on end users.
It certainly...
Based upon what they're going to use it for.
It certainly affects the end users, Your Honor. It does, and it contemplates what uses they may be used for. But again, that is precisely what Congress intended when it granted this authority to the Secretary in the first instance. And I know you don't like me referring to the Senate report, but that is precisely what the Senate report says. It says that the
Congress ever enact the Senate report?
No, Your Honor, it did not. But again, all I'm using it for is to note that the language
is
broad enough.
It has no legal status, does it?
No, it does not.
Never was signed into law by the President.
No, it does not, Your Honor. My only point is that the language here is clearly a reasonable interpretation to suggest that the Secretary may consider the use of a product when it restricts the distribution.
And I think any question the Secretary can consider the use of a product. But the problem we have here is the Secretary is regulating the use of a product.
Well, again, I would say it has effects on the end use of the product, but I do not believe that it is an inherent regulation on product use. I notice I've gone into my rebuttal time, unless there are further questions.
We'll give you some back.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear from the other party. I'm going to give up on thinking about who's felon and who's appellee, since there are cross appeals in the case.
May it please the court, I'm Russell Fry representing Creekstone Farms, the party that is attempting to satisfy its consumer demands by testing cattle for mad cow disease. I'm not sure whether this is permissible, but I'm going to ask if I can reserve a little time for rebuttal, since part of what I'm going to present is...
I guess we have to do that. Since both of you are appellants, we'll see at the end how it works out.
Okay, I'd only like a couple minutes if possible.
That's as much as you get.
Thank you. Let me go right to the discussion you were just having about Section 152, because frankly, I've learned something today that surprises me, which appears from what Council was saying, USDA believes it can place restrictions of any sort in an import permit, even if the product being imported is not worthless, contaminated, dangerous, harmful, which is
we
certainly...
We don't need to get to that for this case, though, do we? I realize that the government's claim of authority there was quite sweeping and a little surprising, but we don't have to get to that.
Well, you're right, Your Honor, because in this case, as it happens, there's no dispute that what Creekstone proposes to do, first of all, is not the product is not dangerous, it's not harmful. The only assertion is that it's worthless because Creekstone proposes to use it for a reason that's unrelated to the treatment of domestic animals. It's really a sort of tautological response that USDA had to Creekstone's request, which was to say that, no, this test is only to be used for treatment of domestic animals. It's only to be used for disease surveillance. And because you want to use it for another reason, we're prohibiting that, even though that use is not treatment of domestic animals. So it's really circular.
Are you challenging that treatment includes diagnosis? You're not, are you?
Yes, we are, Your Honor. We raised two issues about treatment. One was a facial challenge that the use of the term treatment is not broad enough, as Judge Sentell explained, to cover. Suggested perhaps it's not broad enough to cover testing a dead animal to see whether the carcass is contaminated for purposes of providing additional security about the quality of your beef. And if you look at the definition, the dictionary definition, and since treatment is not a special term of art, that's what one should do in this case. It's therapeutic. It's not surveillance.
The definition of treatment in the regulations includes diagnosis.
Yes, but we said that the regulation is ultra-various. It goes beyond the statute. But you don't have to get to that point in order to uphold the district court, because as applied, the district court found...
If treatment doesn't include diagnosis, then why do we do autopsies on humans? I mean, of course it includes diagnosis.
Well, a diagnosis is part of responding to a disease. That doesn't mean that it's necessarily treatment.
Well, if you're talking about treatment in a greater sense, treatment in a herd sense would seem to necessarily involve diagnosis, wouldn't it? This is factory farming here. We're not talking about isolated animals on grandma's milk cow. This is, the treatment would seem, if people engaged in the treatment of herd animals would be, diagnosis would be an important part of treatment, or at least giving Chevron and Christiansburg and Meade deference would be a reasonable interpretation of treatment.
I don't think the court needs to give that deference to a term which the court can interpret for itself, a term with an ordinary meaning. Let me just answer by way of an example. If your child was going to a school where, and you were concerned that he might be exposed to tuberculosis, and the public health official said, well, we'll test the other students in the school to see if they have tuberculosis, you wouldn't say doctors are treating your child. Yes, they're responding to a disease, but it's not treatment. But again, the court, if it wishes, can find that the definition of treatment in the regulations is too broad, but it's not necessary in order to uphold the district court, because there's really no debate about what Creekstone proposes to do is not treatment of domestic animals. Creekstone proposes to test its own cattle for purposes unrelated to USDA's surveillance efforts and USDA's mitigation efforts, and the district court so found in that factual finding.
Lay out in a sentence, if you would, what the purpose is for your testing of the slaughter-age cattle.
Certainly, Your Honor. The purpose is to twofold. First of all...
Lay out in two sentences.
I will. First of all, to assure customers, and especially Asian customers, who when they go to the marketplace have a choice of buying tested beef from their own country or U.S. beef, which the government doesn't allow us to test. And secondly, to differentiate Creekstone's product in the marketplace. Creekstone's business plan is to be a premium producer, and it is. And this is just one of many things that they do to try to assure the public that this is different than the commodity beef that they might buy at the supermarket.
And how do you do that without the diagnosis that none of your cattle had mad cow disease? I mean, you run the test and you get the result that they didn't have it, and that's a diagnosis. They didn't have the disease.
Well, Your Honor, it's not a it's a test about whether there's a potential for the meat to be contaminated. It's not for purposes of deciding whether other cattle that may be slaughtered in the future would have BSE, because each one is going to be tested.
All right, but it's a diagnosis as to that dead animal, isn't it? That it did not have mad cow disease? Isn't that what your BSE test?
Well, it's certainly not treating that animal.
I'm not asking you about treatment. I'm asking you about diagnosis. I mean, how can you
I don't think it's a diagnosis.
How can you tell the Japanese if you don't tell them the result of the BSE test, and the result is these dead animals had
BSE.
No... Pardon?
Does not reveal BSE.
Right, right. The result is that there's no BSE contamination in this animal above detectable levels. That's what you reveal to the customer.
And that's not a diagnosis?
I don't think so, but I don't think it's relevant to...
How do you differentiate between that and a diagnosis?
I would differentiate it by saying that it's not for the purpose of treating that particular animal, and it's not for the purpose of treating any other animals. It's just
been your position all along that diagnosis was not part of treatment. So let's just take diagnosis in your sense.
Mm-hmm.
How do you distinguish between what you told Judge Henderson you would be doing and diagnosis?
I believe that diagnosis is something that you do for the purpose of treating an animal, in this case, and that's not the purpose that Creekstone is performing this test for.
What purpose are they performing it for? Now, you have your motives, but if you're not doing it to say there's no detection of BSE, and I understand that the test really can't say there is no BSE,
mm-hmm.
but what you're going to be telling the Japanese consumer is, or any consumer, that there is no, we did the test and they didn't detect any BSE. Is that not a diagnosis? Maybe not a very good one, but is it not generically a diagnosis?
We would say it's an indication of the potential for the meat to be contaminated. That it's not, we're not telling them what the health of the animal was before it was slaughtered. We're telling them that there's reduced possibility of contamination of the meat with BSE prions.
And that's not the health of the animal?
No, it's the quality of the meat. It's just like if we were testing the meat, and we do, for E. coli contamination. The fact that you find it or don't and report it to the government and keep the meat out of the meat supply if it is contaminated, that's not diagnosis of the health of the animal, it's testing of the product. And the VISTA doesn't address testing of products, it addresses treatment of animals. And the district court correctly found, and USDA agrees with this. USDA agrees that what we're doing, they say, doesn't further treatment of animals.
They say it doesn't tell anything. They say that even if the animal is contaminated with BSE, the tests are 0% reliable at slaughter rate. Is that not what they're actually saying?
Well, they don't quite say 0%, and indeed they couldn't, because they've tested at taxpayer expense over 20,000 cattle that are of slaughter age. That issue really is not before the court, because ultimately it goes to whether, if USDA has this extremely broad authority that it asserts it has under the statute, it was arbitrary and capricious for it to exercise that authority, in this case, to keep Creekstone from testing.
That, however, is one step beyond the issues that are before us today. If you lose today, you've still got that argument, right?
That's correct. I can address just briefly, besides what I mentioned about USDA has tested thousands of younger cattle, the government itself says, acknowledges that BSE does sometimes occur in younger cattle. That's why they're tested. Other countries, like Germany, for example, test all cattle at slaughter above 24 months of age and allow voluntary testing below that. It's just the suggestion that because it's not the most efficient way to monitor the disease means that it's worthless in Creekstone's proposed use is unjustified. Let me just mention briefly this notion of use. Again, we raised a facial challenge to the regulation 9 CFR 102.5D, which is broadly worded and which USDA is asserting in this particular case is worded so broadly that they can place any restrictions on the use of a biological product that they believe to be in the public interest. The statute is not a broad statute authorizing USDA to regulate biological products to promote the public health interest or safety. It's very specific, and USDA has expanded beyond
that's
the terms
really
of the statute.
That's really what we're here today about, isn't it? Is what, how broad the FDA's authority for regulation is, whether it goes to the purpose of protecting public perception or whether it only is to protect the health of the product.
Your Honor, I think that's half of the story. But again, I would remind you that on the question of whether Creekstone's particular use is treatment, USDA suggests that it's worthless for treatment. That's not, and Creekstone never said we're using this for treatment. USDA's concession that's cited by the district court that there isn't any treatment and that this testing is not useful for herd surveillance all supports the district court's conclusion that even if the regulations
I'm sure
are
there isn't a non sequitur in that with respect to you and the district court to say that because there isn't a successful treatment that somebody couldn't be selling something for treatment that was worthless. That seems to be what the FDA's authority here is designed to do, is to be able to keep them from to make them able to prevent the sale of worthless products for the ostensible purpose of treatment. And if somebody were out here selling a serum claiming that it would protect against cholera, under your analysis of treatment, the FDA couldn't regulate the importation or distribution of that, could they? Because you would say, well, it can't be for treatment because there is no treatment.
No, Your Honor, I think that's a little bit too simplistic. We're saying in this particular instance, Creekstone's proposed use and USDA's reasons for regulating that use are unrelated to the statute. The statute was enacted to protect farmers.
I'm focusing in, though, on your claim that this couldn't be treatment because there is no treatment, that this couldn't be both worthless and be for treatment. And that sort of is what the district court said, and I thought it's what you were arguing.
If I said that, I didn't intend to be that broad. The point that we're trying to make is that this statute is to protect farmers from bogus vaccines.
Yeah.
It's not to protect, and in this case, USDA is not trying to protect Creekstone. USDA is not trying to protect Creekstone's cattle. This doesn't have anything to do with the purposes of VISTA. And that's what the case is about.
Yeah.
And this is an extreme example, as Professor McGarity called it in his law review article, of government paternalism. The government telling Creekstone, telling the consumers, you're not entitled to this information, telling the Asian consumers, even though your own government provides you this information for your cattle, you're not entitled to it, and Creekstone, you're not entitled to satisfy your customers'
That sounds more
demands.
Like an argument to make to the policy branches than as counsel. The argument there would be Congress that they shouldn't be able to do this. Your argument here has to be they are not able to do this.
Agreed.
Okay, and time is up. We'll give you back a couple of minutes.
Thank you.
If this point, we have much time. Does the government have any time?
And 1 minute.
Okay, we'll give you, we'll round you up to 2 minutes for rebuttal, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to briefly come back to the question that we were discussing a little bit earlier, which is sort of what it is that USDA is doing when it is issuing these permits. And I'd like to be clear, these are not the sorts of tests, it's not like a pregnancy test kit. This is the sort of thing that you need scientific expertise to both interpret and administer. So when USDA allows these products to be distributed and sold, it does so and restricts that to the parties whom they believe can properly scientifically administer and interpret these test results. You have to identify what tissues are going to test, you need to run the test in a non-contaminating manner, and you need to make sure that you understand what the results mean. And if the district court is upheld here and USDA is held not to have the authority to restrict the individuals to whom this may be sold, any individual farmer may run these tests without that expertise.
Right.
And the problem...
So if you're going to parade horribles, you've got to make sure they're horrible.
Well, the horrible is this, Your Honor.
Is the beef any worse after
the problem is this, and I think we all recognize that BSE is a very sensitive issue among both domestically and internationally. Beef is worse in the following manner. There are one of two situations.
Is the beef even changed after it's
Yes, Your Honor, because...
How has it changed?
Because in the following way, if you have individuals who are administering these tests and are getting, for example, positives because they've run the tests improperly, that's going to set in course a variety of different measures that are going to be harmful to the beef industry in this country, and in particular because there are actions that need to be taken to control.
Is the beef of the animal tested any worse after the test?
No, Your Honor. The beef of the particular animal is no different, but that is not what the statute
is. Is there anything in the statute that speaks to the representations that will be made to consumers about the treated animal insofar as it relates to the Secretary's...
No, Your Honor, but again, that's...
Here you seem to be regulating something that is beyond what Congress set out to enable the...
I think the problem is the level of generality at which we're looking at. Creekstone asked for an exception to the requirements that USDA generally has on these products, saying essentially what you're saying. Look, we want to use it for marketing, we have a lab set up, and the district court and the parties agreed not to address that issue as to whether Creekstone was exempt. That was an arbitrary and capricious count in count three. The question here is simply whether USDA may ever regulate this biological product. And the answer there, yes, Your Honor, it is. If this court is concerned with whether or not Creekstone may be exempt from the requirements of the Act because of the particulars of its testing, of a particular purpose...
Your level of generality just became universal.
Well, no, Your Honor. It's
if it were shown that this product was harmful to the animals, that would be different than if it's not changing the meat in any fashion.
Well, again, the statute is aimed in part
You've
at false...
You've got to get there on worthlessness.
And USDA has
used yourself for testing.
USDA has spoken to that in two notice and comment rulemaking.
Is counsel correct that there have been 20,000 animals of slaughter age tested by USDA?
They are not healthy animals at slaughter, Your Honor. That is precisely the issue here. USDA tests at-risk cattle that exhibit symptoms of BSE. That is not what Creekstone wishes to do here. Creekstone wishes to test universally slaughter age cattle that are healthy at slaughter. And USDA has stated twice in its notice and comment rulemaking when evaluating the measures of other nations that is not only unnecessary, but in fact has no value whatsoever, and in fact that it is worthless. And for this court to evaluate those scientific judgments in a non-deferential...
All they want to do is to get information, create information to face the consumer.
Well, no, Your Honor. I mean, what they're doing is creating a false assurance in the same way that the false assurance...
Well, you can call it false assurance if you want to.
Sure. And
that is not a refutation of what I just said.
No, and if we're agreeing...
What we're going to do is to get or create information to pass to the consumer.
If we're agreeing on that...
Now, isn't it up to the consumer whether he wishes to take a false assurance for that?
Well, because in the same way that it wasn't up to the consumer to... Or it was up to USDA to allow or not allow certain hog serums to be circulated in the marketplace. It's the
That's
same
not
idea.
Analogous.
Well, no, it is, Your Honor, because in the same way that those serums might not have been effective at doing anything, it might well be that a hog farmer wished to purchase that and say, look...
This is not a consumer protection statute.
No, I agree, Your Honor, it is not.
There's nothing here about protecting preventing consumers from getting information.
That's correct. It is not. There's nothing in the statute on that.
Okay. Do my colleagues have further questions? If not, then thank you, counsel. I don't really think there's anything presented there to which you haven't already spoken. Is there any rebuttal you need to what he's just stated? I'll give you 2 minutes.
Okay, Your Honor, and I will limit it to rebuttal, certainly. Three things. First of all, just briefly, the comment about USDA has already concluded in two rulemakings that this is worthless, that's just not true. We addressed it in our brief. USDA just stated in response to comments, they never solicited comments, and they never proposed to ban all private voluntary testing of cattle for BSE. Secondly, this notion that, well, we only test unhealthy younger cattle. As we indicated in our brief, the experience in other countries is that when you start testing cattle that appear to be healthy, you find that some have BSE, and that includes some younger cattle. The notion that, well, this is all necessary because we have to assure that the laboratories know how to do the tests and know how to interpret the results and all that, that's a red herring. That's not why USDA has banned all voluntary testing. It said the only people who can use these tests are people, not just qualified labs, not just veterinarians. They're veterinarians doing testing for us. It's because USDA wants to control the information. It's a misguided notion that if we don't do voluntary testing, people will think the product is safe because nobody has to test it. And it's also stated by USDA that they're doing this so that the big politically powerful meat packers that Creekstone competes with won't have to spend money on testing themselves. That has nothing to do with the purposes of the Veriserum
treatment. Counsel, a lot of this sounds like new matter. I'm going to call quits unless my colleagues have further questions. We did stretch them to give you rebuttal time, and that this doesn't sound a lot like
I was finished, Your Honor.
Thank you, Tom. Case is submitted.